Okay, Abby, what are you drinking tonight?
Oh, well, spring is springing. I hate that phrase, but, so the UFO raspberry Hefeweizen's out.
Ooh. Oh, right. That makes sense. Chaz, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking the Cutty Shark Scotch Whiskey.
That's what you were drinking last time.
That's right. Are you catching on?
Yeah, all right. Okay, then. Jason?
I'm drinking the Tokabaga Red Ale from the Cigar City Brewery in Tampa.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Okay. Paul, what you got?
Tonight, I'm drinking a Boulevard Wheat.
Oh, right. Good old... That's a staple. That's a standby.
Yeah. It was in the refrigerator.
Okay.
Let
me see how well you guys can remember back to the Book of Esther when we first read it. I'm drinking Crown Royal.
Well, if I hadn't listened to the podcast today, then...
Oh, you did that too? I also did that.
I did that.
We have the review.
Well, I figured...
I drink something with a goat on it. That's all I remember.
It's just that, you know, Crown Royal. It makes an appearance in the story. And tonight
Wait,
we're going...
Does it appear in the Greek? It might not be in the Greek.
It might not be in the Hebrew.
Well...
That's a good question, though. I will Google that somehow. It occurred to me too late that we really should have been going off a particular version of the Bible tonight, and that is the NAB, because the NAB is the only Bible I could find that's a good English version that integrates all of the Greek additions to Esther in one book, where it's all, like, one continuous narrative.
Oh, I guess you haven't seen the NAB.
Oh, does it do that too?
Yeah, it prints Esther, and then when you get to the Apocrypha, it prints Esther again with all the additions.
Oh, does it put them in a different color or something, so you can tell?
Yeah, they're in brackets.
Oh, okay, so you can read, like, Masoretic Esther, and then read Septuagint Esther, and read it all in English.
And there's also differences
In the main story, yeah.
Yeah, in the main text. Very small things, like, remember, they referred to Haman as, an Agagite.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, kind of ethnic slur.
Right,
they get rid of that in Greek editions, because it's so later, they have no idea what an Agagite is, so they just call him a scoundrel.
Yeah, they don't know that Agagite means, like, a total asshole who's related to Amalek. So they need to... change the language a bit.
Update it.
We should, I guess we should real quick give an overview of Esther, the whole story, right? Just to give the background here? Or how are we going to do this? This is the first time we've run up across this problem where reading...
Please refer
back to
earlier,
the Esther podcast.
Say a brief outline might be in order.
Okay.
Yeah. Or just that, because even like coming into it, reading, I started out with the Kindle version, and the first thing that I read, I was like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. Hold on. And then I had to go back, and I was like, oh, this is supposed to go here. That makes... Okay.
Yeah.
I got it now. Because it's kind of... Whenever
it's
just...
I totally began the story.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Somebody give the background. So there's the version that we read before that's in all the Protestant Bibles. That's Esther, the Protestant version of Esther, which is translated from the Masoretic Hebrew texts, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the version that we read tonight is the Septuagint version, which has a bunch of additions to it in the Greek.
Mm-hmm. Which are not in any Hebrew or Syriac version.
Right. So we have good reason to believe that they were not part of the original book. But, that said, having gone through the whole Bible over the course of 2011, we learned that much of... Isaiah and other books were also layered like that. They'd start out with some layer, and they get an extra few chapters, and then they get an extra few chapters on top of that. And so it's not like this is something totally new. It's just that back then, it was all happening in Hebrew, and we didn't have access to the early manuscripts to know when the layers happened exactly.
Yeah, it's like it's frozen. We have like a snapshot, because we happen to have two different traditions that it went in two different ways. It went a Greek direction and it went another direction. So we have like a snapshot of how the text branched.
Right.
Like speciated.
And not only do we have a snapshot, but we have a live controversy between our Catholic friends and our Protestant friends over whether God inspired the longer version of the book or not. Our Catholic friends would say, yes. No, the entire book is canonical. Our Protestant friends would say, with Martin Luther, no, it's only the Hebrew bits are canonical.
So should we cover Esther and what goes down? So King Xerxes, or however you say it, has a wife who is named Vashti, who is disrespectful. So he ousts her and decides that the logical thing to do if you're king is have everyone bring all of your virgin daughters in front of him. And he chooses Esther, who is...
Whoa, I think... Okay, you're going a little too quickly. They don't just show up in front of him. He has them primped and groomed and perfumed for a whole year.
Right.
And then has sex with them one by one.
Okay. We're doing
never mentioned the banquet.
It's good to be king, Paul. It's good to be king.
I thought we were doing the abbreviated version. I apologize.
You're leaving out the most salacious parts. You can leave out everything but those.
Well, I figured you'd throw them in, so...
Okay, that's what I'm here for.
So Esther, I guess, is the traditional, hot Hebrew woman that we've read so much about. And
she's great in bed.
Apparently.
She doesn't need to bring any sex toys from the harem. She just shows up with nothing but her skills.
And is cousin to Mordecai.
Yes.
Who I guess had some sort of plot to put this whole... Anyways, so... She gets put up, and after this, then Mordecai ends up saving the king's life from some people who were plotting to kill him, or to assassinate him, and so they hang the two guys that were trying to plot against him. And then this guy, Haman, shows up, who is the aforementioned Agagite.
Yes.
Which is those some terrible, great deaths.
Terrible Agagites. They suck.
Yes. So, he's this Agagite, and he's really upset with Mordecai, who holds all of his Jewish laws and doesn't, worship the emperor, do all of the things that he's supposed to do.
And he doesn't bow to Haman in particular.
Yes. Because, Haman's this badass and has his big progression that he trumps around the city and... obviously Mordecai isn't having anything to do with that. So
no one's going to bow to an Agagite.
Right.
No self-respecting Jew would bow to an Agagite.
And so, he decides to try and, he decides he has a grudge against him and, is decided that he's going to plot and try and kill him and has some gallows made and is trying to set up. He goes out.
Haman is plotting to kill Mordecai. He sets up a 75-foot gallows, which is fairly impressive. it's what Abby called overkill last time.
Hey-o.
You don't even need a rope at that point. Just if the rope gives, the victim still dies.
In any case, so the king, the night before, he wants to go and have him killed. The king is having...
insomnia.
Yes. And is going through some old, the archives, because that'll put you to sleep. And, he has somebody read them.
Podcast style.
All right, so he's having these things read to him. And he comes across the part where Mordecai, saves him from the assassination. And...
from Big Fan and Teresh.
Right, and I guess there was an IOU note stuck on there or something, and they realized they hadn't paid up on it. And so, in this great twist of poetic justice, I guess, Haman comes in the next morning because he wants to hang Mordecai, and before he can, state his intentions, and the king is like, "What would you do for this? How would you reward this guy who did all of this?" Saved my life, or how would you honor somebody who
I forget exactly how he phrased it, but he's saying, how would you honor somebody who the king wants to honor? And Haman's like, that's me, baby. And he comes up with all this glorious ideas, but then wah-wah, it wasn't Haman, it was actually Mordecai the king wanted to honor.
Yep.
So, what a twist!
Oh, the Bible got Shyamalan'd.
Totally. So, then what?
Then they have, then obviously he gets his reward and they have a big banquet. And Esther comes out and tells, well, does Haman...
He's got to get that whole plot in where there's a plot to kill all the Jews.
I was going
to
say, this first, yeah. Before any of this, Haman decides that he's obviously been slighted by the Jews because of his... you know, because now that they've elevated Mordecai and given him all of these rewards, he's pretty upset about that. So he decides he wants to kill all the Jews. So Esther, well, Mordecai, I guess, finds out about it, and Esther, who is the king's wife, they have this big feast, and Esther tells the king of his plan to kill all of the Jews. Then the king wants to kill Haman and is pleading with Esther to... You know, plead on his part.
Well, the central part of the story is that Esther pleads her case for the Jewish people, and the king says, wait a minute, I didn't know that you were a Jew. I totally changed my mind. Let's not kill them all. Let's save them all. And the king does a 180, and Haman, in a wonderful twist of irony, ends up getting hanged on the giant gallows that he'd intended for Mordecai. And there's some weird legal wrangling there about the proclamation, which we covered in the last one, in the last podcast on Esther. Remember that, the whole proclamation to the Medes that could not be rescinded, so the Jews defend themselves.
Oh, yeah. We'll see. They make some changes to that.
Yes. I think we've done enough overview to Esther now that we can get to the additions. And so what do we have... In the additions, we have some extra stuff in the Greek. We have an opening prologue, the contents of the decree against the Jews. That was the decree that Haman had written up, right?
Yeah.
There's some prayers for God's...
King.
But he had it written up in the name of the king, or was it... I thought that was Haman's plan.
Never mind. Yeah.
There's prayers for God to intervene that are offered by both Mordecai and Esther. That's an addition. There's an expansion of the scene where Esther goes before the king unsummoned, and she's afraid she's going to get killed, but then he extends scepter to her, nothing phallic there, and that's his way of saying, I accept you, and then she does some more talking in front of the king. And then there's another decree in favor of the Jews, that's the second decree, and then finally there's a passage of dream interpretation, which is a little trippy. So I think that's most of the additions, right?
And then really quickly at the end, there's a one verse translation thing that name drops Cleopatra.
On a totally separate note, did you notice that the Greek for bully looks a lot like the English for bully?
Really? When is it?
Is Bouleon?
Oh, that's funny.
Bouleon. I can't think of a Greek word that looks that much like the English word except for salad.
In Spanish, it's salada, I think.
Yeah, which is almost the same in Greek. In Greek, it's salata or something like that. Anyway, that's what they call Haman instead of calling him an aggregate. They call him a bully.
Oh, you know what's funny, though? It doesn't have any semantic connection to the Greeks. Just coincidence. I mean, any etymological connection.
God, I hope so. But I'm not going to look that up right now, lest we lose our groove. So, which parts of the additions to Esther do we want to talk about in detail?
Well, a quick overview. Does anyone else's use different words for the characters? Different names?
Yes. I'm afraid mine has does.
Mardukias.
Yeah, I have Mardukias, which looks more like Marduk and less like Mordecai.
Yeah.
As you mentioned last time, I'm Marduk and Mordecai, you know?
Yeah.
Mardukias.
Babylonian god. And then it has Artaxerxes instead of, was it just...
Xerxes.
Xerxes.
Or Ahasuerus.
Ahasuerus, yeah.
Yeah, this
so do you know why, Abby?
Because this is it's translated from Greek, so it's transliterating the Greek forms of the Hebrew.
It's sort of like how John and Ivan are the same name, you know, but John and Ivan don't sound at all alike, because the one's a Russian transliteration, the other's English transliteration, and they both go back to Greek.
Or Joshua and Jesus.
Yeah, right. Joshua and Jesus and Jesus. Jesus doesn't sound a whole lot like Jesus either.
Jesus?
Yeah. Well, that's like an English transliteration of a Greek transliteration of a Hebrew word.
Yeah.
Which was rendered in Aramaic back then, so never mind. I'm not going to get into that.
So is that why Nebuchadnezzar is spelled so many different ways?
Nebuchadnezzar, yeah. Yeah. Nebuchadnezzar. So,
I mean, you have to go back to the cuneiform, but I'm not doing that.
Everyone could do that.
And how hard could it be?
Well, it's not alphabetic, so it'd be pretty difficult.
I know.
Except the Ugaritic cuneiform, but that's an exception. Anyway.
You're like, cuneiform's not that hard. I mean, it's compared to Thai. So are your the books that you're using, is it numbered chapters 10 through 16? Abby, I'm pretty sure yours isn't, because yours is integrated in brackets.
No, mine, it goes 11, 12, 1. Because, like, it numbers the... So there's, like, there's 10 chapters to Esther, and there's 6 editions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it starts with 11.
Mine start at chapter 10, verse 4.
Yeah. Mine too, yeah.
That's where mine is. That's why I was, like, confused. I'm like, verse 4, chapter... What?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're using, I think, the King James version of the...
Yeah.
So that's where Jerome or whoever just stuck them all at the end.
Mm-hmm. Not just Jerome, but a number of subsequent translators as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because the edition starts off with, then Mardochius said, what?
What? That's your cue that something, we got to go read the other book.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I wish I'd have had the NEB like you have, Abby, or the, wait, what's the other one? NAB. The NAB, New American Bible, both of which integrate the text of editions into the main text of Esther. That would have been handy, but... I kind of had to Pulp Fiction it all back in my head, like patch it all together. It's out of time sync, and just sort of go back and read the whole thing and patch it all together.
Well, it starts in the middle and then kind of spirals out.
Huh.
Pulp Fiction, not this.
Okay, I was like, wait, which one are you talking about?
Well, it starts off with a dream, right?
A dream of dragons.
Yeah. And it's
Mordecai's dream, right?
Yeah. He's saying, God has done these things, for I remember a dream, and it says, a little fountain became a river, and there was light, and the sun, and much water. This river is Esther, whom the king married and made queen.
I love it when they make it clear what the parable's talking about.
Yeah, I like that, too.
Also, and there's dragons, apparently.
Yeah,
there's dragons. Haven't you read the book of Revelation?
He's the man. Of course he's going to be the dragon.
Dreams aren't awesome without dragons. Also, of course, one of the dragons is him.
So dragons and dreams. It was.
What do the dragons stand for?
I don't remember. He says. One of them's like the strength of God or something, wasn't it? I don't remember.
So did...
No, the dragons are I and Amon.
Yeah.
Who's Amon?
Oh, Haman is the bad guy. Who's the bad guy in the other translation? Haman?
Haman.
Oh,
Haman is Haman. Okay. It's just that they're not pronouncing the H.
Oh.
It's Haman, the son of Amadethus, the Agagite. Same guy.
Oh, wait. Yeah. What verse is this?
The dragons are... The dragons are Mordecai and Haman. They're like... A polar opposite dragons, like blue dragon, red dragon. I can't believe I missed this the first two times I listened to this.
One's Godzilla and one's King Ghidorah.
It's that whole name change thing. It's killing me.
Yeah, so he's setting up the whole tension,
right?
Almost between, between Mordecai, who's the upright Jewish law follower, and Haman, who's trying to eradicate the Jews.
Yeah. And whereas I like a story where the good guy is not a dragon, that's not how this dream is going.
Right. We have the nice, curvy river.
True.
Well, that's kind of hot.
Thanks for that, Paul.
It's curvy and moist.
Yes. Yes, exactly that.
We did have a lot of fountain metaphors back in the OT.
Oh, God. Sure Song did. Of Solomon? Holy shit. And Proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon is just kind of a perv.
The stuff that's going to stick with me from our year of the Bible is going to freak people out for a long time. Because I'm going to be like, you know what, the Bible does this, and they're like, holy shit, stop it, just stop it, dude.
You know when he means feet, he means penis.
Yeah. I'm going to be annoying people for years with what I learned in 2011.
I still love how in verse 9, it's a dream, and so of course, his nation is the one that has all the good shit done to it.
Oh, duh.
Or else he wouldn't tell us this dream.
Yeah, if his country lost in his dream.
No, thanks. Not important.
So right. Then, he's hanging out with some eunuchs?
Yep.
Good times.
I was going to say, I didn't find very much else terribly interesting until the revised throne room scene.
Well, where does that start?
Oh, I don't remember. Where he extends his scepter.
Oh, Paul, you're such a dirty-minded bastard.
That's 12 chuck.
Yeah, Damien, didn't you make that joke earlier?
What? No.
Yes!
No, Chris edited it out. It's not in there.
Oh, God. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris!
I was quite caught off guard of the fact that it mentions Ptolemy and Cleopatra.
Yeah, I told you.
It's at the beginning. It's at the beginning of chapter 11.
Yeah. Would that be Ptolemy the Third?
Whichever one married Cleopatra.
I thought Cleopatra was his sister.
That's not going to stop him.
Nothing can stop you from Cleopatra.
So that dates this book to the end of the Roman Republic?
Around 114 BC.
This is a serious question now. Do you think that Esther should be nominated for the list of all-time hotties from history?
Probably.
Right up there with Cleopatra.
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah.
Right
up there with Florence Nightingale.
It's chapter 15, by the way. Chapter 15 in whatever version it is that we are reading. I'm not sure where it is in Abby's Bible.
Okay, this is what goes on. It's 11 verse 1, and it's tagged on the end, then 11 verse 2 begins the story, which makes no sense.
Oh.
Right.
They just stuck on the end instead of the beginning. Because, I mean, obviously, this is like, I mean, I assume this is real. It's like, we found this old Jewish book about Purim. Let's translate into Greek and add some stuff without telling anyone. Let's put some God references in it.
They did add some God references.
Oh. Yeah.
Last time we mentioned that this is a fairly godless book, but not in the Greek as much.
Yeah. Last time, I listened to the podcast, and did I mention at some point that, Esther was the only book not found in the Dead Sea Scrolls? Or the only book of the Tanakh? That
I was going to say, yeah. It's the only book in the Tanakh.
You did not mention that last time. The last time we did the Book of Esther, that you did not mention that.
It's been bugging me for 7 months.
And now you got it. You got it in, finally. Chris, don't cut that out.
So, I mean, this, it's probably because it doesn't mention God. There are other books not in the Dead Sea Scrolls, like Jurassic Park.
Well, I only have, like, 2 notes in this whole book, in this whole part of the book, the whole additions to the book.
Not a whole lot to it.
I don't know if you guys have a whole lot of notes, but one of my favorite things, and I want to try to work this into my everyday English now, is to the expression, I abhor it as a menstruous rag.
Wow.
Which is chapter 14, verse 16. And it's even done in such a poetic context. She's talking about
it's her, like her garments, because she's queen and she's like, oh, I hate all this.
Yeah, it's like her symbol of authority. Yeah, like whatever she wore upon her head is a symbol of authority, whether it's a crown or whatever. She abhors it as she would a menstruous rag.
How the hell did I miss that?
I don't know, man. You weren't paying attention.
Most translations are going to gloss over that.
So now, like, whenever somebody says, dude, she's on the rag, I'll be like, well, let me tell you about the Greek version of Esther. Where that expression comes from, I presume.
Yeah, she does all this stuff in this edition. She does a whole sackcloth and covers herself in dung.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was what the majority of the notes that I had from this were, just this little segment of her going in. Like, because it was kind of, I don't know what the word would be, cold, I guess, in the original version that we read. But in this one, she prays before. Do what?
Where are we when you're doing with these notes? Where are they?
Right here in the same section.
Yeah,
same
chapter 15 in our version.
Okay, cool, thanks.
She fainted a lot.
Right. But so she comes into this throne room, she prays and everything, and then she comes into the throne room, and God changed the spirit of the king into mildness. And, you know, whereas before it's like, oh, is she going to be okay? Oh, look, he put his scepter on her shoulder or whatever it is that he does. And okay, it's going to be good. But in this one, it's like she comes in and he's like, oh, I love you. And then like, oh, okay, here's the scepter thing. Now tell me what you need to say. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. It just seemed ruined.
So she was more emotional in her humbling herself before God before she went into the king's chamber. There's a lot of humbling and praying and fasting. And then she goes into the king's chamber and it's a more emotional scene in the Greek here too. Basically, it's a generally more.
Well, it's not. I wouldn't call it emotional because, like, God like flips a switch. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like lifeless automatons acting out God's plan.
The opposite direction of the one on Pharaoh.
I would say that God did flip a switch, and it was in the king's pants.
He hardened.
As Paul would say, he didn't harden his heart.
His scepter.
I feel like I'm more familiar with the Book of Esther now, but I don't feel like that the additions changed anything that much. They just sort of expanded on the story.
Well, I think they changed a lot.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, they add a lot of God talk, which was totally absent in the other one.
No, it wasn't totally absent. It was implied.
Well, yeah, like once it was implied.
Okay, but.
Another difference, I think, mine is chapter 16. I don't know what KGB has. When they actually give the text of the repeal letter, kind of like the amendment that repeals prohibition or whatever, and adds all this stuff. Oh, cool. Ooh. Where's it that? Makes Haman into a Macedonian. That's how you know it's so late. Alexander wasn't around.
Huh. So they mentioned the Babylonians, the Persians, the Egyptians during Roman times, and now the Macedonians.
That's in chapter 16, verse 10.
Yeah.
This is a clusterfuck of time periods.
The entire proclamation that you speak of is chapter 16 in our version. The great king Artaxerxes under the princes and governors, So how would that change things? I mean, now that we have the text of the proclamation, how does it change the story?
I think around... Where is it? Well, he makes all these weird claims about Haman wanting to, like, transfer to the Macedonians the sovereignty now held by the Persians. Like, he's envisioning, like, the Macedonians are going to take over Persia. But the thing, it doesn't it explicitly repeal the original.
Where's that?
Yeah, at 17. You will therefore disregard the letter sent by Haman because we've killed him already and he's bad.
Right, whereas before it wasn't a repeal so much, it was as it empowered the Jews to defend themselves.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this still, it leads to the same war, but I guess they tried to soften it.
It's better than, so that first one still stands, but they can defend themselves this time.
Well, better, well, better is relative. I think that you have a more entertaining genocide if you go with the original version.
Yeah. When the ones being genocided fight back?
Well, no, that's not...
Well, they still do, but... Never this mind. One, the people are supposed to disregard the first order to kill all the Jews. So, now if they're doing it, they're in the wrong. Unlike before, when it was okay.
Well, as long as it was a Jew that couldn't defend himself well, you're good.
I just think it makes for a more dramatic story when they get to defend themselves and then there's a big fight. People like a big fight.
Yeah, it was the Greek editions definitely do nothing but muck up the story structure.
Goddamn Greeks.
Well, not all of them.
You don't want God to damn all the Greeks?
No. Although apparently he has.
I get the sense they're doing pretty well damning themselves lately.
Yeah, they're doing okay there.
I don't really want God to damn anybody.
Athens is burning. It's just sort of the Greeks' way of saying, we built democracy and God damn it, we can take it away.
Well, they already did. That's what the IMF is. Anyway, Esther.
Sorry. Esther.
No, I love the last verse in this chapter that just says, if you don't do this, I will burn your shit to the ground.
Which one's that? Where's that?
Verse 24. Therefore, every city and country whatsoever which not do according to these things shall be destroyed without mercy with fire and sword.
I thought that's just how every executive proclamation ended. I was reading Obama's prayer proclamation the other day. It ended with that same sentence. That's just normal.
Finally, showing some tail. Some backbone, I mean.
What?
Some tail is not right.
What websites are you looking at, Chaz?
Whoa.
He's got lots of it, of course. Wait.
We all know that Amon got lots of tail. He had a special house built for that.
No, I was like trying to look. I just came across this interesting, passing mention that no, archaeologically and historically, no one's really sure how closely linked the Macedonian culture was with Greek culture, but Alexander set himself up as like this Greek hero. But was he actually Greek?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Race is a social construct anyway.
It could be.
Well, he had the most swords.
I know nothing about the Macedonians, so I haven't gotten there yet. In my quest to learn it.
Saying that Macedonians aren't Greek is sort of like saying that Napoleon wasn't French because he's, you know.
Corsican.
Yes, thank you. I mean, come on.
Wait, was he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
They killed enough people to be whatever the hell they wanted to be.
Alright, so do you guys have anything else to say about the additions to the Book of Esther? Because this is your chance. I got my bloody rag thing in, so...
I would feel remiss if we didn't talk about how he strangled some eunuchs.
I tried talking about eunuchs, but apparently it makes some people uncomfortable.
What?
Well, we did gloss over it pretty fast, so I wanted to get back to it. In that chapter 12, Mardochius, or Mordecai, whatever, took his rest in the court with Gabatha and Thara, two eunuchs, and he found out that they were going to lay their hand upon Artaxerxes.
Ah, yeah, there's a plot, yeah. And they were strangled.
The king examined him and said, yeah, hang the bastards.
By examined, he means tortured.
I was going to say, examined, there must be something more than just, like, closely looking at their faces.
No, it's just examining. They only feel like they're drowning.
Is this...
Lie back while I cover you with this towel and examine you.
Also, Gabatha sounds like a giant Japanese monster.
So there's probably some poor listener named Gabatha who feels really bad.
Aww.
Well, then they should go fight Godzilla.
She goes by Gabby. Give her a break.
Is this the plot that's mentioned later? Is the Greek author trying to, like, add backstory to stuff that's mentioned later?
You mean the one that gets mentioned in the Chronicles that are being read while the king's trying to fall asleep?
Yeah.
I think it's the same one. I think it's the same story. It's filler. Fill-in. Right?
Okay.
Well, yeah. Where does it show up in the NEB? That should give it away.
I took it as filler, as the same story.
Where does the story of Gabatha and Thara show up in your NEB?
Well, it's when... When does he read the paper?
They had newspapers back then?
Well, the Chronicles, the scroll.
On the crapper, like everyone else.
I was going to say, on the crapper, where do you read the paper?
On my iPhone. Well, of course the eunuchs want to kill the king and cut their dicks off.
That makes sense. That's a motive for revenge right there. I never saw it from the eunuch's point of view. It's so elitist to me.
Don't they usually make eunuchs because they did something wrong? Like, isn't that usually a punishment? Or do they just do it to random people?
I thought it was both punishment and you could do it by choice.
I thought it was a hereditary thing. Like, your father was a eunuch, his father was a eunuch.
You got to do it once.
I think you're talking of family name Enoch.
Oh, right. Sorry.
They were adopted.
Yeah, 2:21-23 tells the story about the eunuch. So, yeah, the editor was just... I'm going to expand on this story. Like,
note to Chris, we haven't said anything substantive about the Bible in the last...
Bible isn't giving us anything.
So if you're starting at the end, you can cut. You can cut everything.
Terrible.
It wasn't terrible. It was just.
That's true.
It's fine.
It was just.
Yeah, it was alright.
It was expansions on a book that we already read.
Yeah.
I was thinking about trying to weave this into the one that we already did.
No, Jesus.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
I thought of that too.
And then Chris sent me hate mail.
What's
He called me a bully in Greek. All right. So next time we're. The wisdom of Solomon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Purim's March 7th, I think.
Oh, yes. We'll be sure to broadcast this on March 7th.
Yeah.